in the World Cup. For us. He scores!
Yes, hello and welcome to another edition of the Fox Football Podcast. Adam Peacock alongside Robbie Slater this week. Rob, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, actually, no, not real good at all. It's Why? Still lockdown.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, no, well. Yeah, when's it going to end?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm with Andrew Bolt on this one.
Oh, here we go.
Well, I'm certainly not with Dan. Okay.
What a way to start.
I'm not with Andrew Bolt, but I'm certainly not with Dan Andrews.
Yeah, well.
The People's Republic of Victoria.
I'm surprised people in Victoria realise what's going on outside its borders because it has massive problems with that usually, especially when it comes to AFL footy. But look, it's the impossible job working out what the hell to do with things. I do like, though, Robbie, that the government have introduced a kind of like a sporting committee to look after the sole purpose of getting sporting competitions back.
Well, they
the
do, they, and especially kids. I mean, kids, you can't lock kids up forever. And it's proven now by the chief medical officer. Is this a football podcast or
no? We can go anywhere.
Nah, but the thing is that they've said that that it's healthier for kids to be outside playing sport than cooped up all day long in their house, and I agree with that.
Yes, we've got a couple of questions along those lines a bit later on, but we'll start with the promising news that the A-League looks like it's returning August 1. Nothing been totally locked in yet, but that's what they're guided towards. So it's given a bit of clarity to the professionals who are going to get paid, most importantly, and the clubs keep on ticking over, and it looks like we're going to try and finish the season in August. They're thinking hub in Sydney. You okay with that?
Listen, I'm okay for anything that gets it done and to get a calendar. A bit surprised August 1 being so far away, considering that the NRL have got a May 28, AFL look like it's June, but look, it is what it is. Hats off to James Johnson, who is obviously leading the game now, and that's what it needed. It needed one voice, one person, and no secret that Fox Sports had copped a lot of shit on social media, to be honest. I think they've seen that there is one man leading it now, and they've asked for that for a long time, leadership, and it's great they've paid the final instalment and players will get paid, and you know the PFA can stop going around threatening to sue everybody. And so that's a good thing. That doesn't mean what's going to happen in the future, we don't know, but it's certainly positive news. And as I said, hats off to James Johnson, who's, you know, in very difficult circumstances has managed to pull the proverbial rabbit out the hat.
Sounds like the clubs are on board with him as well. There's a close relationship between the clubs and the FFA, given what's happened in the last 3 years.
You know, it's quite amazing that, you know, there was this shit fight for, you know, 2 years, which put us pretty much into place we were at before the coronavirus came and made it 100 times worse. It's just, look, all as I can say to that, why waste our breath? What happened, happened. It's a shame it happened because it affected so many people and it certainly affected the game. All we can say now is you can't turn back and change it. So what's happened. We just need to look to the future.
Luke O'Brien's actually asked a question about what happens to the community clubs, the grassroots clubs, especially when there's no grassroots football happening at the moment. The good thing about we're talking the grassroots clubs, not so much your youth league clubs and your representative clubs, but your ones just basically Saturday mornings, barbie firing.
Yeah, exactly. All over the country.
Kids playing. They don't have the overheads that a youth league club has. Mm. And then as you go up the ladder, the overheads get greater. So hopefully those clubs can survive. I've got no doubt that they'll look at it on a pro rata basis with things like registrations. Mm. I can't see them having parents. And if there is, it's an absolute outrage that parents would have to pay, especially in financial times like this, the full freight for half a season.
No, that's right. Pro-rata. And look, hopefully, and there's only one side to the story that you've just put across. And when I mean one side to the story, one side to that story that's got to happen is the parents of the players have to be looked after. They've paid their full registration in good faith. And look, we do also need, and that's a job for state federations and local associations, I think, to look after those grassroots clubs because they are very, very important. And let's just hope. I think we've got an end of the month For grass football date?
Grassroots football, yeah, end of May.
So hopefully that's going to happen.
Well, it could come forward. I mean, National Cabinet meeting this week.
And it could happen Friday, the week after.
Back to political spheres, and I'm not sure what Andrew Bolt thinks of all this, but it sounds like that might release.
Well, listen, I'll go and ask Adam Bandt just to get a balanced opinion.
The left and the right, all right?
But we shouldn't go down that road, but I'm sure it'll fire a lot of people up. But the good look, yeah, we need to look positive now. We've just talked about a positive thing with, the professional game now having, something to look forward to. James Johnson doing a terrific job at the top of the tree, and the other great thing that we've seen is the announcement of the starting 11, which is a great thing. You know, to see that finally we've said for years that we need X players involved, and to see that actually happen. And you've got Bresciano, of course, who's on the board. But I think it's truly a great thing for that panel to meet and talk about the issues of the game.
Were you suspended, were you? You couldn't get selected in the starting 11.
Yeah, look, it's not my kind of gig, to be honest. I knew about it. My name was obviously there. But, It's just not my gig.
You don't have the
patience. I like flying on my own. I don't have the patience. And I couldn't think of any. I got Bozza 12 months a year with Fox Sports. I don't need another panel to be on with my great mate. But in all honesty, there's some great minds there. And you've got big Viduka, of course. And it'll be hard because Viduka lives in Croatia and Ocon lives in Belgium. You got Josip Skoko, Duke's his great mate. And of course, you got the girls, and it's up to them to put ideas forward, discuss ideas, and obviously present them to the board. But they're not the be all and end all. I mean, there's lots of other minds out there. The one great mind that they should all—it's like a gravitate to is Ron Smith.
Yeah,
he is an absolute genius on Australian football and. Largely. I mean, of course, the players had talent, but he did wonderful things at the AIS.
What would you throw in there? If say, and you said it's not your thing, but if you were to throw in one piece of, well, not advice, but your point of view,
on what side? On the football side? On the structural side? On what?
Clean slate. The
one thing that this coronavirus is going to do is it's going to bring a lot of people back to earth. And I've said it, I know you're going to say, oh, not that again, but there's got to be now common sense. We are the, I'm saying, and I've said it before, after four World Cups, winning an Asian Cup, which is a massive success on home soil, that the FFA are broke is a joke. And the PFA, and it's not their fault, in fact, it's the people that allowed them to get what they got. It's got to come back to normal now. It's got to come back to for playing for your country. Yes, you should get this and you should get something. But it's ludicrous that for a code that is nowhere near the number one in this country on a professional level, we are the fifth highest paid nation in the world in respect to the national team. And now the Matildas just got equal pay. And they're getting paid too much as well now that they're on equal pay. So they're both going to have to take a hit. The collective bargaining agreement has to be ripped up and James Johnson is going to have to restart again because the money's just not going to be in the game to be able to afford that. And last time I looked, four World Cups, we've won two games. I don't think we've made a semi-final yet, so I don't know how we justify being the fifth highest paid nation in the world. And the Matildas, let's be honest, I'm going to be fair, they get paid more than the US national team. Women's national
team. That's another case at the moment as well with the US women's national team in front of court going up against US soccer. But it sounds like that you just want everyone to make small sacrifices along the way. And collectively, if everyone makes these small sacrifices...
For the good of the game.
For the good of the game.
And that the money should filter down rather than the other way around. And that the kids, hopefully, don't have to pay thousands of dollars to play the game because they've got a bit of talent. And how many do we miss? Because how many parents just can't afford it?
Yeah, yeah. With the women's, it is a bit different because they are on retainers.
Why? Sam Kerr plays in England.
This
and I'm
was
not
done...
having a go at Sam, and she's not the only one. Yeah, I know they're on $80,000, some of them.
Yeah, because they don't get paid by their club, or when the CBA was done, they weren't getting this money out of clubs like Chelsea.
You can't pay what you don't have.
Yeah.
And, you know, there might be a million reasons why this, that and the other. And I'm saying keep the equal pay for the girls. But it's got to be at a low. If you want to keep the equal pay, that's fine. But instead of reportedly £4,500 match payments, dollars, then, you know, that should be $1,000. I'm sorry.
I think everyone's going to get chipped along the way this financially about all of this. So we'll wait and see what exactly happens with the structure of Australian football. A lot of discussions taking place behind closed doors right now as we sit here with plenty of time to discuss things behind closed doors. Premier League return. So they're looking at mid-June. Massive debate going on in the UK at the moment about are the resources best served getting footballers on a park as opposed to just looking after the general well-being of the community. But it looks like it's gathering pace. Now, the tricky thing is with the Premier League, for anything to be agreed, you need a two-thirds majority.
Yeah.
So if five or six of the clubs say no, well, that ain't happening. Mm. You know how many teams are going for relegation at the moment? Six.
Yeah.
Brighton, West Ham, Watford, Bournemouth, Villa, Norwich, assuming that no one above them drops into a bit of trouble with seven or eight games left. But it's going to reach a point where self-interest is going to become, if it's not already, the main topic of discussion.
Yeah.
Because even like these teams stuck in relegation zones, they're talking about, oh, we lose our home ground advantage. We don't want any part of this. Is home ground advantage that big a deal when there's no one in
the stadium now? And we live in unusual times, the times that have never happened before, so everyone's got to suck it in. And if they can finish the season, of course, as a Liverpool fan, I would love them to. Did you say self-interest?
It's self-interest. I think we all know that they're going to win the league. They just want to win it fair and square. But
well, they won't. And look, I'm first and foremost, you know, I'm a Liverpool fan, and obviously I played for West Ham, so, you know, I've got a very soft spot. I don't want to see them relegated. But if they don't start up again, I don't think you can get a Liverpool championship. I know they did it in France with Paris Saint-Germain.
Hmm.
One good thing for me out of what France did is that Lens got promoted after a long séjour on Ligue 2.
Well, there's a story there about Amiens. Yeah, is that how I say it? Amiens? Wow. Look at that. I've been listening to your French.
Très bien, prononciation. C'est parfait.
I only know a couple
of words. Rest de la podcast en français.
If you want. If you want, might make a bit more sense.
It might make a bit more sense. I can say what I want then.
Yeah, exactly. I only know a couple of words, one of them being...
Merde.
Yeah, that. You've already said it in English a couple of times already. And the other one, la catastrophe.
Ah, la catastrophe, c'est une tragédie.
So, Amiens, they've blown up. They said, this is ridiculous. We're going to take this as far as we can. We've been relegated when we still had time to get out of relegation. Let's have a 22-team league. Mm. So these are the things that are going to be happening all through Europe in the next couple of months about who gets relegated.
The decision-making,
That's the bigger thing, I reckon, relegation, because it means so much financially, especially in the top five leagues.
Yeah, 100%. And prestige and all the things that goes with it. The players, playing in first division or second division is a massive difference for everyone involved in the club.
So if they got back, you'd be okay with Liverpool winning the Premier League title at St George's Park, the training base for...
Wouldn't matter. They can play on the runway at Heathrow for all I care.
What about in Perth, Western Australia? See that story?
What a stupid story that was. I saw the WA Premier come out and say, well, you know, we have a border. He went through the whole list of, you know, borders are blocked and international... And then he said... I don't know why he just didn't say this at the start. He said, and anyway, they haven't been in contact with us.
I said,
obviously they haven't because, mate, hang on a sec. What's that outside the window? Oh, it's a pig just flew by my window. Seriously. I mean, some people come out with things on social media and all of a sudden the media grab hold of them and it's...
Well, because there's nothing else to talk about.
Yeah, that's true. In fairness to them.
Maybe it's Perth, Scotland that they were talking about.
Yeah,
maybe the countryside there near Dundee. So, yeah, we'll wait and see what happens with Premier League. One thing I have been doing at the moment, though, a lot of time, obviously, I've finally got around to watching Sunderland Till I Die. Now, it took a lot for a Newcastle fan to build up the courage and go, righto, I'll give it a go. I'm hooked. It's fantastic. Because you've lived it, and I guess for ex-players it's not as interesting, but to feel like you're
part of it,
you're on the inside of it.
Yeah.
all and how it's operating, the day-to-day stuff. And they've done it so well because you feel like when the games are happening, you're inside the crowd. Mm. You're riding their emotion. As a Newcastle fan, I almost have sympathy for some of those Sunderland fans. Almost. There's some good people. They're solid people.
Of course they are. Of course.
But there's one character that has popped up, and he's actually got a connection to you. He's in season one. He's the CEO of Sunderland, Martin Bain.
And what was he?
He was the CEO of Sunderland. He was also the head of business infrastructure or something, and he was high up before he became the chief executive and got on the board of Rangers.
Which,
in the late 90s, early 2000s, I'm not sure exactly when it happened.
Oh, I do.
Rangers actually decided to invest in Australian football with a little club called Northern Spirit, which had a player by the name of Robert Slater on its books.
And a coach called Graham Arnold.
Arnold.
And
do you remember one Martin Bain?
I do.
Become infamous thanks to this series.
Yeah, and
He was already infamous with you.
He had a fair bit to do with Northern Spirit, and that's about all I'll say.
No, you can't leave it there.
Okay, you fucked the whole thing. what else do you want to say?
How did he do that?
Made some, well, he made... Look, I...
Or was it already you-know-whatted?
Well, it was already... That's, you know, obviously when Rangers came in, that's where we lost our money, obviously, because they came in to save the club, take the debt on and move it forward, not pay out shareholders, of which myself, Graham Arnold and Ian Crook, who's Western Sydney Wanderers, of course... famous ex-Norwich footballer.
And the late Bill Collins.
And the late Bill Collins, who was physio to the Socceroos, among other things. Mm. And, yeah, so they took over and, you know, basically that's at that point we'd lost our money. And
how many times did you ring your accountant that week?
Ooh. A few. Yeah. This is a touchy story because I actually sued my accountant. So I don't think I was talking.
No, we won't go down that path there. But just the role of Martin Bain. So what did Rangers come in and say that, oh, we're going to take over, everything's going to be rosy?
To be fair, they didn't say much to us as ex-shareholders. We just reverted back to playing.
How weird is that, though?
It was weird because, they made lots of decisions that I think... Because the club had sort of gone under almost and they came and saved it, they thought they had to change the whole way Northern Spirit had been set up and the way it was, you know, kids getting in for free. And that was completely the wrong thing to do. Mm. The only thing that Northern Spirit didn't have was funds, you know, to get decent players at that stage because there was no money left.
Yeah. But that was that to do with the structure of how Australian football was run at that time?
I mean, I think they were a bit shell-shocked when they took over.
Do the books.
Yeah.
Have a deeper look.
Well, that goes back to my accountant. before I put my money in. Fuck me, Northern Spirit and two divorces.
Yeah. Hey. There's another beep.
What a great life.
You're in a swearing mood today.
It is a great life. Well, we're in lockdown.
Yeah, you're getting frustrated. And then I'm bringing up this story.
It's okay. My eight-year-old son's sitting over there. He's got his headphones on.
Thankfully.
So
thankfully. No, so did Martin Bain, did you get to meet him?
Yeah, I met him. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But I can't remember too much about him. It was a very difficult time. Mm. That we went through. Remo Nogarotto was the chairman of Northern Spirit, and then there was me and Arnie. So yeah, difficult times. But look, like I said, you can't look back too much. But it is quite amazing that
he's ended up.
He's in it knees deep.
So he's there, and he's gone.
Obviously, they never looked at what happened at Northern Spirit.
And Rangers as well, because they left when that consortium and Martin Bain walked away from Rangers. And there's some story that he tried to sue them. Eventually ends up at Sunderland. They go from Premier League to Championship to League One in the space of, 12 months.
I know,
it's a quite extraordinary
story.
They
did what pretty much Manchester City had done years before.
And this guy was
in a much worse way, I think.
Oh, horrid. And this guy was like, he bought one of those Cairo chambers, those deep freeze chambers. He was the only one using it. He was the CEO. None of the players were using it. What do you need a Cairo chamber in the northeast?
I've never heard of a Cairo chamber. Yeah, you just walk outside.
It's your Cairo chamber. But it is an extraordinary series. How they look behind some of the things that you learn and see how things are done. Mm. And even then, when you behind the scenes and they've got great access, you feel like you're probably only getting 50, if that, 50% of what's going on. Yeah. Some of the stuff that goes on in football clubs.
Oh, it sounds extraordinary.
Live through.
Especially on football clubs when they have end of season holidays.
What's your best end of season holiday that you went on? Don't give me too much detail because you're going
to
end up in court.
It'd have to be going to Tenerife with West Ham on a non-sanctioned...
On non-sanctioned. Who was there? Neil Ruddock?
No, he died. He wasn't my time there. There was about nine or ten of us.
Julian
Diggs, John Moncur, Ian Bishop. Yeah. He was brilliant, Bish. I always remember one player. He got that drunk. He got that drunk that we were all sitting around for breakfast in this big hall, you know, with those holiday places, and I looked up. And he was standing, I'm not going to say his name, out of respect. And I looked up, and in the middle of the hall, this player was playing, standing there, and he's got a plate full of breakfast. I mean, it's got about 8 eggs on it. It's got the mountain of baked beans, a cushion, and the beans are slipping over the floor, and you can see kids and families are sort of looking at him. And so I got up, and I sort of walked, and it was about 25 minutes. I go, what's up? He goes, I've forgotten where we're sitting. I was just standing there. I said, idiot. I said, follow me. And that was a trip. That was a trip. And I always remember Harry said, Harry Redknapp said before, he says, this ain't sanctioned by the club. He said, I'm not endorsing this. And anyway, I did make the news of the World front page with Dixie.
I don't think you can Google that anymore. I think they've wiped all of those off the internet.
Yeah, well, News of the World doesn't exist anymore. Well, to be fair, I'm not going to go into why we're on the front page, but all you have to know is that a News of the World undercover got us.
Really?
Yeah, they were undercover.
When those things happen, because they happen a fair bit. And
it was undercover.
They don't happen as much now.
No, back
they
then
used to happen all the time. Like Sam Allardyce lost his England job because of one of those.
Yeah, no, it was undercover News of the World that done us.
When you know it's out there, you know that the possibility is out there, does everyone in the industry know know about
knew
it?
Yeah, and we thought, Tenerife will be sweet. Up you go, my son.
But it happened all the time. It was almost every second week on the front
and
of the News of the World.
It was always the same thing when you got asked, but it was always the same, it was like a players' union. Everyone knew that the reply to any question asked about it was deny, 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 deny.
Oh, those days. Those days.
Days were incredible. They were incredible.
I can't get my head around the fact that it kept on happening. Managers and high-profile people just kept on. Did they put... there's those stories of how they plant girls in front of you, for instance, over there in nightclubs and
That's what happened. That's what happened, undercover.
And
they hire them. They pay them to do... Yeah, and there's girls that'll do that. Or men.
Yes.
No, I'm not saying who was the undercover. Can't give the whole story away.
Are we
the
going
other funny
down
one was, I remember when we first got there, we flew in, and so we had a bit of a meeting. We flew in at 1 in the morning from London. I don't know why we got there so late, and I remember the next morning we had a little meeting because a lot of the boys were going to play golf, and a few of us didn't play golf. We just hung around the pool. But there was one rule, it says no one get wasted. Right, on the first day, because we're all going out tonight and blah, blah, blah. And I always remember about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I've come up to the hotel lobby and there's this, just scuffle going on. And I've heard Ian Dowie's voice. And I've looked over and Ian Dowie's carrying one of the other players and he's unconscious. I've walked up to Downer and I've gone, Downer, I said, I thought, we were supposed to, he said, not everyone listened, did they? And he carried this corpse, got in the lift with the hotel manager saying, this is not correct, this is not, and going off in Spanish. And I said, it's okay, he's not feeling well.
Weekend at Bernie's.
So that was the first day. It was Weekend at Bernie's, dead set.
Brilliant, brilliant. Some more stories. I was reading about Lauren, the ex-Arsenal player, part of the Invincibles team, and it's on foxsports.com.au at the moment, about how he he explains the Arsenal Invincibles, they used to fight all the time at training, all the time. And it was the magician that was Wenger at the time managing the egos. Like Henri would get stuck into Patrick Vieira. Lauren had a fight with Henri himself. So players that you wouldn't expect to be, you know, you expect them to be lovers, not fighters. They were still fighting. So guess the point.
That's why they were winners.
Does it happen? Do you need that?
All the time. Happens all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think there's a part of it that you do need. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, fit players, testosterone, you know, young, fit players training every day. It's like a family, you know. It's you know, you have arguments with your family and
I don't get how you can drop it so quickly.
Oh, you drop it straight away.
Why?
I don't know. It's an unwritten law, maybe. I don't know. I had a few. Mate, you get over them straight away. I remember a quite famous one for the Socceroos with me and Frankie.
Frank Farina.
Yeah, we had one that hit the... Would you believe it? Tomo was absolute... Eddie Thompson, who's obviously passed away quite some time ago. Great man. But he was absolutely filthy because on the day of the game, it happened on the Tuesday of the leading into the Sunday game against Canada, which we'd lost 2-1 in Canada. This is the prelude to Argentina in 93. So it was a massive game. We had to overturn the 2-1, and me and Frankie had a scuffle. Well, it was a fight.
Who won?
I don't know. No one wins in the end. It's a song, that, isn't it?
it's a mantra.
There was no loser. Let's put it that way. But anyway, it was in one of the Sunday papers. I can't remember if it was the Sun Herald at the time or the Sunday Telly.
It's a day of the game.
It was on the front of the sport, the front page of the sport, you know. Yeah, picture of me and Farina and, you know, massive fight and all controversy. But it happened on a Tuesday, so they played it well.
They held it to
the Sunday, and that certainly, well, to be honest, had no effect because it happened on Tuesday, and even if there was a game on the Wednesday, it wouldn't have had any effect.
What was it about?
It was usual crap in football. They usually always start. I remember Mike Newell, and that was Colin Hendry, and might have been Colin Hendry and Newley in Blackburn. Five-a-side had a bit of a tiff. I had a tiff with Newley as well after a reserve game at Blackburn.
What, you just leave a boot in on a tackle and then it escalates?
Yeah, they just get a bit heated and a few things flying and then everyone jumps in, it's over. But so what happened from memory with it was a five-a-side and it involved Paul Oakham, who was probably very innocent, but he was, I think, I don't know if we were getting beaten or it was the other way around, but he kept being cocky or something from memory. Mm. Like I said, he probably wasn't, but I was probably fired up, you know. Like I said, I was a redhead. You know, redheads grow up abused. It's one of the tougher... there's actually scientific proof out there that redheads can take the most, can take the most crap because they get so much crap. Yeah. You know, carrot top, blood nut. Yeah. You know, growing up, it's a form of racism, ginger. And there's worse ones I won't even say on this podcast.
Fan of pants.
So anyway, and we've got a history of being fiery, and I guess I was like that. So I don't know, I fired up and I had a go at Paolo verbally and said probably something, you know, inappropriate. I can't remember. It happens all the time. And Frankie took exception to it. And then I took exception to Frankie saying, you know, I probably said, you know, F and this or butt out or something. Mm. And Frankie, you know, Frankie was a competitor, as I was. And the trouble with Frankie, when his eyes go, it's all over. And Frankie's eyes went. They were doing, it was like watching a dryer, you know, going round and around, and he swore to one, and I go, oh, here we go. And I walked towards him, and we just started throwing punches. I don't think they were technically perfect. And before you knew it, everyone jumped in and that, and there was more words and da-da-da-da. And then we went back our own ways. And Tomo, we got called into Tomo's room. Before dinner, and we were all already sort of giggling about it, but Tomo wasn't happening. He said, well, you know, you two are great mates. Da, 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 da. What do you think you're doing? Da, da, da. And I said, we both apologised, shook hands, and that was the end of it.
Full stop.
It was full stop. That was the end of it.
Dropped it,
nothing. Yeah. And then everyone took the piss out of us at dinner. And everyone was saying who won, you know, Frankie won, oh no, Bulldog won, or blah, blah, blah. But that's an example. So that came out, of course, to the outside world, if anyone witnessed that, and obviously someone did because it made the front page in the sport before the Canada game, which, by the way, we did win 2-1 and 1 on penalties. It was a debut of a certain Mark Schwarzer.
The Schwarzer game at the SFS.
Yeah. At the SFS, first Schwarzer game. And that took us on to the Argentina games. But going back to, you know, what you're talking about with Lauren from that Invincibles Arsenal side, it happens very often.
Mm. Yeah, I still don't know how there's not more transfer requests. I suppose you can't slap a transfer request in on an Australian team, but it's extraordinary. And to this day, you and Frank remain mates. So,
yeah, of course, and it's great to see that he's on the, you know, that panel, the starting 11.
That is good.
That is good. That's great.
One last question from Chris as well on Twitter.
Chris.
About young Australians, about the choice for the talented ones, about staying in Australia or going overseas to try and crack it. Is there a right or a wrong way?
Well, at the moment, there's only one choice.
Go. Yeah.
Get out of here. Mate, that's the only choice. And let's hope that this new panel we just talked about, that's come together, and let's hope James Johnson, they're going to work on to fix that. But at the moment, the kids, it's proven. They've got nowhere to go. They've got nowhere to go, mate.
How much of an indictment is that, that someone like you says that without even thinking 15 years into the A-League?
It's ridiculous that I say. And I said the opposite when this league started. I said it will be a great opportunity for now young players to stay here. And, yeah, like we did in the old NSL days, which is a whole different podcast. I played nearly 180 games before I left this country.
Yeah.
170 or whatever. And, you know, your Vidukas, your Arnolds, your Farinas, they all did this. Ocons, Zeliches, they all did. Of course, there was the other four that went as 16-year-olds, but by and large, you played a lot of football here and then you went.
Yeah.
At the moment, you got no chance, very little chance of playing in the A-League at the moment, the way it is. So you have to go.
Extraordinary. Anyway, we'll leave on that note. Short and sharp today, but Robbie, look forward to your company very, very soon again. I'll do those beeps and things like that, but thanks for the story.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It was good.
Probably give you an hour's work getting rid of all that swearing.
There goes my afternoon. Anyway, Rob, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening
as well.
It's just a hello out there to Mark Bosnich. There's a bit of a cold war going on between me and Bozza. He's not speaking to me anymore, but I do love him.
No, you are on good terms still. I'll catch up with Bozza very soon. And also, I'm going to have a special guest later in the week. Tara Rushton sat down with Sam Kerr a couple of days ago. We're going to put that podcast up as well. So plenty to come from the Fox Football Podcast. Have a great week, everyone.